You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Another edition of the Stardom Road Podcast here on the Countout Podcast Network. I'm your host, as always, Scott Edwards, and with me today, as always, is my good friend and co-host, Trent Breward. Trent, how are you?
How am I? I'm in mourning, Scott. That's how I'm going. I don't know how you're going, but this is a very sad day in the Trent household because certain faction, as we once knew it, is no longer. Queen's Quest is not Queen's Quest as we know it. I don't want to say dead. We both thought we were coming in here to say Queen's Quest is dead. It's dead. It's on life support. We both want to just pull the plug. Just want to end it. But it's technically not dead. The flag is still waving, but it should be a white flag at this point.
Here's my take. Azumi's not in it anymore. It's good. It's gone. Once the person that was connected to EO is no longer there, got it. It's over. See you later. We are here to talk, of course, the history of Queen's Quest. Did we have this idea thinking, oh, it might be over? Absolutely. Is it over officially? No. But timing is this wonderful thing. As we were doing this series, of course, with the Tommy Hayashisha versus Io Shirai coming up for Marigold Summer Destiny 2024. So the timing works out anyways, and of course the history of Queen's Quest is a long historic one, one of the most important parts of Stardom's history, probably its most famous faction, I'd argue. I don't really think that's up to debate. I think everyone knows Queen's Quest probably the most out of the many. It's either them or Uedo Tai, and moving forward, maybe Uedo Tai will start to catch up because Queen's Quest
has the help of certain members being worldwide, the Pitbull connection, so to speak. Mrs. Worldwide and EO Sky.
Mrs. Worldwide EO Sky. That is the new nickname we will be going with her moving forward. But we are going to talk EO Shirai era today. Next episode, we'll be doing the Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest, and then the final episode of this will be Utami Hayashishita's era and pretty much up until Azumi got kicked out.
The Aphrodite era, basically.
Yeah, the Aphrodite era. It's Utami's era, but the Aphrodite era, if that makes everyone feel better. So lots to go over. The Utami era, funny enough, wasn't long as her as leader, but it has a lot of story to it. And that could be as packed an episode as either of these two, which is pretty funny. But this will be a lot of fun. Queen's Quest is, I think for many people, the faction that they connected with, if you are a Stardom fan, whether it was the EO era or the Momo era or the Utami era, they were always on top of the world. I think that's one of the more interesting or more important conversation points right off the bat. Queen's Quest was really always on top. It was really weird when they weren't, which we had a lot of, really, when Utami was leading. They weren't on top, right? Because the end of Saya's reign happened, and then from there, it was just like, oh, what are we doing? Obviously, we will get to that in two episodes when we talk about that amazing story and so on. But through their reign, they always had a top, damn near historic champion leading the way. And I think that's going to be one of the fun talking points here. DDM, I bring them up because we, of course, did that faction episode and episodes, which you can check out at any time right here on the Countout Podcast Network or wherever you get your podcasts. But we talked about their dominance. Queen's Quest pretty much has that dominance over its entire reign. Now, it's funny to say that as they sit here with one person in the group, but they did have a great run for as long as they've been going. So we will talk about their history today. Like I said, we dive into the EO era. Of course, Trent, that's when you got into stardom with the EO era, the most famous era of Queen's Quest. I think everyone just sees Queen's Quest and they know, oh, that's EO's faction, right? That's kind of how it goes. And I think that's always funny, especially because how many people probably didn't see her when she was running Queen's Quest, but like you said, she's Mrs. Worldwide, so that's how it goes.
It's the funny thing, you sort of mentioned that everyone knows that it's as EO's faction, but people come into Queen's Quest at different periods in their time, and they know it by different leaders. Now, I came in through the EO reign, you came in through Momo's reign, and a lot of people, are, even if they know it as EO's faction, a lot of people have fonder memories for the Momo Watanabe period because that's when like they came through, they saw Momo Watanabe at her peak. You know, a lot of people really resonated with Momo Watanabe as a future ace during that period, or they really resonated with Utami, even though that wasn't Queen's Quest at their most dominant. It's one of the rare factions, dude. They had multiple different leaders. And even though Queen's Quest stayed the same, it's not like Oedo Tide, who they go through, they went through very different sort of, you know, as the regime changes, they go through very different styles. Queen's Quest ultimately stays with the same vision. But the leaders sort of, you get these different sort of periods where people identify with the group differently. And sort of your version of Queen's Quest comes through with the leader, not with the style, but with the leader. And I think that's a really sort of fascinating thing to look at. Which, you know, I sort of mentioned you come through with Momo. Is that kind of the era you identify with Queen's Quest most? Or, you know, gone back and looked at a lot, do you still kind of look at the EO era personally as your era?
I look at the Momo era. Funny enough, so much of the time I've watched Stardom, it feels like the Utami era, even though Momo was leading for the entire Utami title reign, except for like a month. So it's really weird. Like I look at this group in, for both of them as like the era I identify with, just because again Utami was on top for so long, despite not being the leader. That's a funny thing. But yeah, the Momo one, Momo was, when she was Queen's Quest leader, my favorite wrestlers were Mayu and Momo. Funny enough, I did get into all of this because of EO. So it was a pretty easy way to learn. EO handed the keys to Momo. So it was pretty easy for me to be like, oh, I like Momo, you know? And, you know, obviously she's great and all that. But yeah, no, I more identify with the Momo one, even though I've watched through so much of EO's anyways, pretty much all of it from the turn and how it was established to the many other turns that happened within the group and so on. But yeah, I think that's always a funny way to look at it, because it's like it is the Momo one that I do, but like Utami was pretty much right there the whole time, she just wasn't leading it.
And then Utami took over, and then, like, she wasn't the dominant person of the faction. It was Sai Kamitani. And pretty much from the moment Utami was leader, Sai was their top champion for the entire time. And then Sai took over, and no one was a top champion for that period. So it doesn't pay to be the leader of Queen's Quest unless you're EO Shirai.
Yeah, I know. Like, I always wanted... Well, no. Momo, it worked for Momo. She was the Wonder Star champion for a year plus. Like, let's not forget that.
EO rub only lasted so long.
The thing is, she was leader for so long that it eventually, you know, moved over. And that's kind of that, you could see why she would move on. Cause it's like, all right, you've been doing this for a long time. And it's very clear, like, we want Utami to lead, so but we'll get to that at another time. That's very far in the future. I was gonna say that's very far in the future. We're talking too much about Momo's run. We're here to talk about EO's run.
I just want to ask that question because it is such a unique thing for factions in Stardom to have this situation, because like Stars has had one leader, Cosmic Angels has had one leader, Donna Del Mondo had one leader, and you know, Queen's Quest, Oedo Tai, they've had multiple leaders, but Queen's Quest has kind of feels different to Queen's Quest in that facet. You know, I came in EO Shirai. To this point, I still see EO Shirai as my leader of Queen's Quest, but it really comes down to when did you join into Stardom, I think, is who you see as the leader of Queen's Quest. But I see Io Shirai as the leader, and that's where we're starting with all the way back the end of 2016. Now, for those of you who follow Stardom Road, for those who have been walking the road with us, this is going to sound somewhat familiar because it's not that long ago that we actually covered the formation of Queen's Quest in another episode. About a month ago, I want to say, when we were talking about Mayu Iwatani and Io Shirai and their feud over the World of Stardom Championship, we did cover the formation of Queen's Quest because that was pretty integral to their story. So we go back to November 11, 2016, during the Goddess of Stardom Tag Team League Tournament, the final where it's Thunder Rock, Io Shirai, Mayu Iwatani versus Yoko Beto and Kairi Hojo in the final. Now, this has been brewing up for a while, but ultimately Io Shirai is getting fed up with Mayu Iwatani. She decides to, you know, drop that bad habit known as a best friend. She wants to form a faction, form a group that is more like-minded to her. So less sort of buddy-buddy, less friends, less like hanging back, just doing fun things. Just, she wants single-minded focus. She wants best of the best people who are just solely focused on being the very best versions of themselves as wrestlers. She doesn't feel Mayu's doing that. So this is where Queen's Quest, although we don't get the name Queen's Quest at this point, this is where Queen's Quest comes into being. She brings out someone that we haven't seen in over a year at this point. She's masked. She's wearing a cape. No one in the audience knows who she is. Nobody in the audience knows who she is. No one in the ring knows who she is. Definitely not Kairi Hojo trying to look under the mask, asking if that is who. Definitely not Kairi Hojo. But yeah, it's Rio Hizuki who, and yeah, obviously we know Hizuki in 2024. She's a veteran. She's been around the block quite a bit. She's been in multiple different factions, including Queen's Quest.
Only the core factions, though, which is appreciated. I just want to put that up.
Yeah. She doesn't join any sort of two-bit factions that are only around for a little bit. She doesn't join Jungle Assault Nation.
I wouldn't join a Jungle Assault Nation.
Of course you wouldn't. You wouldn't appreciate it.
I would join a faction that wins.
Oh, yeah. Well, they won the artist titles. Yeah.
I was going to say, good team.
But yeah, Rio Hizuki at this stage, she was a rookie. She joined Stardom in 2014. She left in 2015 for undisclosed reasons that the internet likes to assume certain things. Look, at the end of the day, she was a teenager in the wrestling industry. They tend to pop in and out. And look, especially Stardom in 2015, I wouldn't blame a teenager for deciding to peace out for a year, but she comes back. You know, Io Shirai brings her in and rechristens her HZK, which is still pronounced Hizuki, but for the case of the written version, it's HZK, which does become kind of important when we're moving forward. People who know Queen's Quest in 2024 will probably know why.
People still write later. That.
Yeah, and it's a little confusing when you're trying to write about the history of this kind of thing and you're talking about Hizuki and having to jump between HZK and Hizuki, and even though it's obvious who you're talking about, it's like, what's the best way to go about this? But I digress. A week later, you know, this duo was facing against Mayu Iwatani, and at this time, noted softball player Momo Watanabe, who decides to ditch the softball gimmick and join this cool new duo by kicking Mayu Iwatani in the back and then stabbing Mayu Iwatani in the back. And Momo Watanabe, mind you, doesn't change her name. She doesn't become MMO, massively multiplayer online, or anything like that. She just remains Momo Watanabe. I don't know how she got out of the name change. I guess her name doesn't suit the name change gimmick, but
she was a good name. I mean, I'm not saying Rio Hizuki was a bad name. I'm just saying,
saying that.
Well, you couldn't abbreviate it really well. Like, you call her MW, is that what you want to call her? MMW? Like,
yeah,
it doesn't work. Like, Hizuki and Azumi.
Spoilers.
I think people know that Azumi joined this group. Seeing spoilers. That, you know, we're only like 3 days removed from her getting kicked out of the group. It wasn't too long after what we're talking about right now. She had joined the group. Sayaka Tani ruined that, but you know, she joined.
Maybe if Azumi had done better in the match, she wouldn't have been kicked
out. She took out she took out Momo.
They took each other out.
I mean,
collective elimination.
That match was a heartbreaking match. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. That we'll do that in a few weeks. I don't want to do that right
Speaking of Momo Watanabe, and breaking hearts, she broke Mayu's heart in this case and joined Queen's Quest.
What else is new?
A week after this is when we get the official name Queen's Quest. At this stage, they were just the cool kids. Yeah, you know, Io Shirai's bringing in the proper leopard print, and you know, she's dyed the hair blonde. She's going full heel at this stage. But this is when, in November 27th, this is when the name Queen's Quest is officially born. And I believe you have some interesting information on the Queen's Quest name.
Yeah, you want my hot take? Queen's Quest, better name than the cool kids, as you just called them.
Hey. Look, I'm not brainstorming faction names, but the cool kids have released some good albums. I like their music.
So if anyone wants to know where the name comes from, that actually comes from Sonny Gutierrez, who, of course, now works with Marigold. You know, Sonny had tweeted a while back that, you know, he worked with EO plenty during her time there. And she had asked him for a cool English name for the group. That's where he landed on Queen's Quest, which obviously has become the most famous name in Stardom besides the wrestlers themselves, as well as Bow Down to the Queens. So obviously, pretty cool tidbit there of like, you know, where do we associate one of the most famous factions that we've seen, you know, in our time? Where does the, you know, because with Queen's Quest came cool, right? You like to the cool kids, right? Queen's Quest was cool. And they've always been cool until Saya Kanatani became leader. Then they were done being cool. But they were so cool, right?
And they were mostly kids.
Yeah, that's
just saying they were cool kids.
yes. But like, you know, you have the masks, the jackets, which we all talk about, right? Oh, when they, you know, the wrestler finally earns their Queen's Quest jacket, and you know, so on and so forth. And it's always like that was one of the big parts of it. You just had to be cool to be in Queen's Quest. And you have the cool flag, and it just comes with so much. It's a hard group to be part of, and we'll talk about that through its history. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm saying that as this group, you had to be a certain level. You had to, you truly had to have an aura to you to feel fully fit in. That's why, like, every time we go through each era, there's a certain trio or, you know, the main members more often than not do fit that aura. But I did want to share that tidbit because I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It very much fits my impression of a lot of English in Joshi, where it's just like, I just want something cool. There's not necessarily like, for the wrestlers themselves, they don't actually put a lot of thought into it. It's just like, I want something that sounds cool. Give me something cool in English. And thankfully, in this case, they had someone who can actually think of something that A, would be cool, but B, actually fits the gimmick. Like, obviously, with Io Shirai, like, you immediately associate with Queen. It's like, yeah, that fits her to a T. It's perfect. The Bow Down to the Queen thing worked really well. But it's not unusual to sort of see Joshi come up with some English stuff where it is literally like, you probably just looked up a dictionary and sort of was trying to sound it out and thought, yeah, that sounds vaguely cool. You said it out loud and said, yeah, I'm going to work with that. But yeah, Queen's Quest was born in November 27th with that trio, Io Shirai, Hazuki, and Momo Watanabe. Despite what we were sort of saying, a lot of people do associate Azumi with the initial trio. They sort of, you think she's there from the beginning. She comes in early, but she's not there just yet. She has to sort of wait her turn a little bit, and she doesn't come in until the end, the beginning of 2017. January 7th, we see their first championship success. Io, Hazuki, Momo win the Artist of Stardom titles from Kagetsu, Viper, and Kyoko Kimura, which is, I think, important to note, the first time Queen's Quest and Oedo Tai actually go, are in a match together, which, when you look at the long and storied history between these two factions, that is actually quite a historic little moment between them. Another thing to note, despite the fact this is for the Artist titles, Viper was not the Artist of Stardom champion. She was filling in for Hana Kimura, who had a wrist injury, which is kind of funny when you see how often the Artist of Stardom titles do have to get vacated for injury over the year. Admittedly, the wrist injury wasn't necessarily a long-term one, but it gets dropped. So Queen's Quest win the title. Unfortunately, it does also have to get vacated very soon after because Momo Watanabe goes down with an ACL tear later in the month. This is not a small wrist injury that can be recovered from quickly. This takes Momo out for most of 2017. She's out until November. And really, when you look at like Stardom factions, you see this where so often like factions do kind of find themselves teetering with an injury or two. And at this stage, Queen's Quest is just two members. It's Io and Hazuki. Later on, they'll be very much teetering with just Hazuki and one other member when Io's out for a bit as well. Does make you wonder, like Queen's Quest could have ended within a year because of that Momo Watanabe injury. Crazy to think like they lasted as long as they did because Momo obviously becomes leader a year and a half later from this point, but this year would have been all about preparing her for that eventual leadership run.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about how much they wanted this group to be important, right? Mm. They kept fighting through the ups and downs and the injuries that came with it, and you could see why. You could see what this group would go on to become, right? That, you know, and this group got rather big in time, you know, and it's for the reason you're saying. It's like, you just don't know. Injuries happen, right? We talk about it now in Stardom and really wrestling overall. They just happen. And with factions, we've seen it time and time again in Stardom, how a group can start with three and they can grow within a month and then be down to one or two months later. It's just how it goes. It's just natural. So there's something you said about the importance of where they wanted Queen's Quest to go. And, you know, there's a reason we're talking about the history of Queen's Quest and how important it is to Stardom's history. But when you have Io, of course, leading the way, you can fight through the Momo injury, obviously. And it's always funny for me to look back at that time because it's Io, so it's the top star in the company, but then it's, you know, these young up and comers who you see why they're among the best in the world now. They were pushed into a big position early in their careers, whether it be Hazuki or Azumi or Momo, of course. And you can see why these three, I think these three are the perfect three to talk about, are where they are now. It's because they were learning under Io from the get-go.
It's important to remember at this point in time, 2017, Stardom isn't like the faction system we know in 2024, where everyone is in a faction. Yeah, it's the people who are being put in these factions are there for a specific reason. You're not just there to make up the numbers. So if, you know, with Momo out, it's not just next person up necessarily. Yeah, they're not just filling the numbers here. So with them sort of going, okay, we're just going to keep it very small. I mean, Azumi comes in, we'll talk about that in a second, but they didn't want to dilute Queen's Quest. They could have just chucked in a bunch of names here, but the point with Queen's Quest is, especially in this era, is they are picking people specifically for their excellence and the future vision that they have. Mm-hmm. Now, Io Shirai is preparing these youngsters to be the next stars, next top champions in this company. And you lose the importance and the impression of that this group if you are just putting in people for the sake of adding bodies. Io Shirai wants this faction to be great, and everyone has to be essentially sink or swim. You know, the whole point was that she was leaving Mayu because she wasn't taking it seriously. If you add someone in here who's just there to have a laugh, then you defeat the point of Queen's Quest within a couple of months.
And you got to remember, I mean, she was going to be gone. We talked about that in the EO Mayu conversation. She was supposed to be gone summer 2017. So it was really going to be this young core moving forward. That's why, you know, she was there to get them ready. You know, Queen's Quest is greater, no, unsurprisingly, because EO stayed another year. That's just a fact. It gave everyone more time to grow and develop into what was ready to lead forward. Obviously, Hazuki would move on to another faction and whatnot, but Momo would be there at that point. She would be ready to take the reins, and Azumi would continue to grow. And you had many more, and obviously this, you know, you may have heard of her, Tommy Hayashishita turned out to be pretty good as well. But you know, things happen. We're talking about how they could have went away with an injury, you know, with all the injuries early on. They were ready for anything to come their way because they were going to be without the top person that you really needed, especially in 2017, right?
Yes.
2018, it's like, all right, they're good. They're ready. 2017 would have been it would have been very interesting to see what Queen's Quest fate was had EO left like she was expected to at the time.
Especially because, the whole second half of that 2017, early 2018 is about prepping Momo to take over, and you don't get that while she's injured. But February 11, Azumi, this is at Shinkiba. Azumi comes out after the main event Io Shirai's had. It's like a three-way tag match with Shayna Baszler and everything. She comes out in a hoodie and takes off that hoodie to reveal she's wearing a Queen's Quest shirt. The crowd do the, it's very common during this era at Shinkiba. I love the Shinkiba crowd around this time, by the way. They do everything right in terms of reacting to the right spots and, you know, cheering at the right moments. And they kind of buy into the kayfabe of everything. So that even though, like, you know, they like when Awedo Tai do heelish stuff, they'll boo at the right points. Like, it's just, it's the right kind of crowd for this kind of thing. But anyways, she then asks EO if she can join the faction, basically offering her up to be a substitute for the now injured Momo Watanabe. And she even comes up with the idea for her revised name. I admittedly, I had forgotten this. I thought EO like just liked shortening names because, I mean, her name is quite short herself. It's two letters. But it's Azumi who comes up with AZM, which quite famously she would then do a video reminding people, which Mercedes Moné would not see that video of. But yeah, she reveals the AZM name to match Azuki, which EO also comments on, it sounding quite familiar. And I now transcribe this particular comment because I think it really sums up early era Queen's Quest. You know, a lot of people talk about what is the Queen's Quest faction, and especially when talking about, you know, they can be rather stoic. Maybe not as exciting a faction as Donna Del Mondo were, or Awedo Tai, or Cosmic Angels and everything. Now, I think when trying to bring in what is Queen's Quest all about, what EO says here is so important, and this early era of Queen's Quest really sums it up. So this is what she sort of tells Azumi when, after Azumi asks, can she join? Queen's Quest isn't petty like the rest of these guys. We don't worry about juniors or seniors or holding people down. Azumi-chan, what grade are you in? To which she replies, eighth grade. She's in eighth grade. In Queen's Quest, she's the same as me, even though I have a 10-year career. Hazuki and Momo likewise. This isn't fun and games. We're not the same as they are. So the question is, can you do it? And then Azumi replies, I can do it. No, I will do it. And I also wanted to point out that both the crowd and EO respond really positively to that little change there from can to will. And then EO goes, always keep that focus and show everyone, please. Welcome to Queen's Quest. And then at the end, she also comments, our average age has fallen again because they're cool kids. They're kids. But what I specifically wanted to comment on there is, you know, in Japan specifically, there is a very strict hierarchy. You know, if you are the more experienced member, be it by age or specifically by years of experience, you automatically have a certain level of seniority and sort of control in a group setting. And with something like Queen's Quest, that would automatically put Io Shirai so far above everyone else in this group. Now, obviously, in kayfabe, Io Shirai is so far above these others anyways. But the whole point of Queen's Quest was, if you become good enough, you would supersede Io Shirai. If Azumi got good enough, she would be higher on the pecking order than Io Shirai. Not because of age, not because of experience, just because you're better. And we would see this later on with Momo Watanabe. She supersedes Io Shirai. When Io leaves, she becomes a leader. Not just because Io leaves, but because essentially Momo beats Io. Then we see it with Utami. You know, she becomes the leader, not because she'd been in Queen's Quest for longer, because she hadn't, but because she won the right. She was the strongest member of Queen's Quest. And this is what Io was all about. She wanted Queen's Quest to be basically a fight between the strongest of the strongest. And you lead Queen's Quest by that strength. And that's what it was all about. She was telling Azumi, if you want to be a member of this group, you might be the youngest, so this actually benefits you, but this isn't the point. I need to see your strength. I want to see that you're ready to do what it takes to be the best.
It's almost like you're trying to highlight all the problems with Queen's Quest today by bringing that up in the past few months. Because
it was more to me wanting to highlight, because people do get confused with, like, Queen's Quest can, because they can be stoic and it's not like an outward exuberant group. And it's like, well, what's Queen's Quest about? And like, you just say, oh, they're about being the best. It's like, well, that's boring. Well, it's not boring, but it's not always demonstrated as well as it could be. Yeah,
they are to be the strongest. It's why, again, how I talked about at the top of the show. For most of Queen's Quest run, they have someone on top. They have a champion on top. You know, we talk about this time with Azumi here, and I'm not gonna lie, hurts me a little bit more going through this, and you know how she's worked all these years to become the strongest, never got to lead, now out of the group, but it's fine. I also want to say that almost as famous as Queen's Quest is the saying AZM. Thank you, Mercedes Moné. a classic that still and never will go away. There's a great video, if you ever find it, where Azumi teaches everyone how to say her name. She still has to do it, but it's fine. But the beauty of this time period, again, it's what these three specifically go on to become. They go on to become among the strongest, right? We're currently talking, right? Momo Watanabe had the greatest, one of the greatest Wonder of Stardom title reigns. At the time when her reign was over, it was the best, most defenses and all that. Hazuki's now a three-time Goddess of Stardom tag team champion, one of the great tag wrestlers in the history of Stardom. And Azumi's the greatest high-speed champion, in my opinion, in Stardom's history. There's something to be said about Queen's Quest and what it created. Sure. Hazuki didn't do it in Queen's Quest, but it's the teachings and it's the mindset that Io set on her. And you still see, I still think you see Io in all three of them in some way, shape, or form. You may not always notice it, but even like the way Hazuki wrestles, you see Io, right? Like just the simpleness of her drop kick where she does the double rope bounce. That's an Io trope. Yeah. That is an Io thing. And I think that's the beauty, again, of going through this original era. And I think that's why a lot of people should know about the Io era besides, oh, it was Io's. Like, Queen's Quest was Io's. Yeah. Like, there's a reason these three are where they are today, and it's because of their start in this group.
And just mentioning in terms of strong title reigns and influential moments, we're in the middle of one of the best red belt runs in this era with Io Shirai as the World of Stardom champion. As we determined 2 weeks ago in our red belt rankings, you know, there's only one title reign we decided to be better. So check that out on the Can Out Podcast Network and watch it on the YouTube feed, because you get to watch the tier list get created. You got to plug in. I got to get a plug in.
We always got to get the plugs in.
Exactly. So the artist titles did get vacated with Momo gone, but Queen's Quest would reclaim them in what would become a very messy and convoluted period for these championships. But it would kind of become kind of normal for the artist titles. It's not until sort of 2019 that the titles would become like defended with any kind of regularity and strength. Here's what happens. Queen Quest reclaim the artist titles with Io Shirai, Hazuki, and Azumi. They win a four-team tournament. They would hold the titles for 21 days and not defend them successfully at all before dropping it to Team Chibi, which is Kari Hojo, Konami, and Hiromu Nomura. We will discuss her in an episode down the track. They would then defeat Team Chibi, who successfully defended it once. They win them back a month later and then drop it a fortnight later without a successful defense to Team Jungle, which is Jungle Kiona, Hiroyu Matsumoto, and Kaori Yoniyama. They then win the titles back 2 months later, but without Azumi. It's Io Shirai, Hazuki, and Viper. But Trent, I hear you say, Viper's not a member of Queen's Quest. No, she was a member of Oedo Tai. She joins Queen's Quest on July 30th, when basically Io says, hey, you're a member of Oedo Tai, but you don't want to be a member of Oedo Tai. You want to be a member of Queen's Quest. And Viper goes, you know what? You're right. Which is the first defection in the Oedo Tai Queen's Quest War. Spoiler alert, it would not be the last.
Oh, really? I had no idea. Yeah. It's not the last? Huh. Interesting.
No,
well,
no.
I have 100 million of those.
Viper joins Queen's Quest.
Out of the original three, two did. The other one wasn't around to do it.
One did. One doesn't defect. She gets not bought out, not traded, not stolen, drafted.
Close enough.
No fault.
My point is they switch over. That's enough.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes.
Either way, and they embrace it. But yeah. not the biggest storyteller there. If I be like, you know what, you're right. But, you know, that is another key part. Viper's a very important part of the original Queen's Quest, right? You get, as we've talked about on other shows, you and me, Rossi loves his monster wrestlers.
Yes.
So pairing her, who, you know, Viper would go on to be a world title challenger. Viper would be one of the more pushed foreigners in Stardom's history. And one of the best. I want to give her that credit as well. One of the best. So again, joining Queen's Quest, usually a good thing for you back then. You're usually getting some good opportunities. Many Queen's Quest wrestlers have won titles, not just the artists that you just, you know, we just flip-flop 25 times.
But yeah, it just gives you an idea of what the artist titles were like during that era. It was
a
bit ridiculous, but yeah, that period especially was bad. But Azumi became a two-time champion during that time, which is nice. The titles would solidify for a bit during that time. Hazuki, Io Shirai, and Viper would hold them for a while until the draft. And the reason they would have to vacate the titles is because of the draft. But some other stuff happens during this time. We skipped it to mention the Viper thing in the artist titles, but there is a couple of things that happens that does need to be addressed. Namely, Io Shirai loses the World of Stardom Championship to Mayu Iwatani, ending her record-breaking World of Stardom run. And around this time, she also obviously has to take time off to heal from injuries. And earlier, we mentioned that, like, Io Shirai was looking to leave for WWE. This is kind of the first time that that was going to happen. You know, she dropped the title to Mai. The whole point was both her and Kairi were going to leave for WWE. She comes back because of issues, health issues. So WWE kind of passed on her at the time. And this is where it's interesting because for a month here, Io's out, Momo's out, Viper hasn't joined yet. So Queen's Quest is just Hazuki and Azumi, which, as we kind of mentioned, isn't much of a faction. It would have been very easy if Io was to still be gone, you probably wouldn't have been able to keep Queen's Quest going. But at this time, obviously, Io Shirai was going to be able to come back to Stardom for a little bit, so they kept Queen's Quest going. And they decided, you know, bring Viper in, give you some extra strength, give you some power, which, you know, especially looking at what Viper brought in, because she wasn't there all the time. which I think was important because she didn't detract from the growth of the youngsters. Mm-hmm. But when she came in, she was a very valuable powerhouse and gave them some very valuable strength. Yeah, because she was a legitimate main event, someone you could put in the main event scene and was a viable sort of main event level talent. And, yeah, with the youth of Queen's Quest, gave them someone you could really throw in there against the best of the best.
Yeah, it was a threat for them. You know, again, while the others are learning, while the others are growing and developing, you have Viper to kind of instantly step in when she's around to be that force. And I think that's, again, very important for what Queen's Quest was going for, right? They're being the strongest, the best. Who's the strongest? Viper. That's the strongest. And it instantly sets that apart. And, you know, for all the powerhouses that have come in since Viper, I kind of do wish more would have been part of Queen's Quest, right? Obviously, the most famous of the past few years, of course, Megan Bain, who was, for the most part, kind of on her own. She, of course, teamed with Micah, but otherwise on her own. I think any time you get someone like a Viper, it does fit what Queen's Quest was going for because it's about presence. It's about the aura, right? And I think that's why it just works so well. That's why that group works so well early on. Again, if you tried to do, I think if you tried to do one of these factions, and, you know, maybe we'll see it in Marigold sometime because they do have a lot of young wrestlers that are learning. So it'll be interesting to see how they go there. But anytime you have young wrestlers like this, if you tried to do this now, say you saw a faction in Stardom start, right? And it was Tam. We'll say Tam's top star, right? So easy to go with. And then it's just like Sayaka Karara and Aya Sakura. That's it. That's essentially what they did with this originally. And then you add in the youngest possible person, which was Azumi. But Azumi, of course, had been wrestling for at least some time. Then it's not adding necessarily a rookie. But I think that's like something that people should think about. It's like that's essentially what they did. With EO at the helm. Now, the roster wasn't as deep as it is now and so on and so forth, but that's the idea. And then you add in the foreigners that really help, I think, again, like you said, fill in for certain matches. And, you know, we'll talk about the gauntlet that we already have talked about many times on this show. Viper's a key part of that. So it's like that's where we go hand in hand here. It's like, where does Viper matter? It's in those types of spots, especially. Like she was a real great addition for this group and for Stardom at that time.
Yeah. It also helps fuel a little bit of that undercurrent of the Owen O'Tire Queen's Quest story. Because obviously, like, both factions around this time were building and rebuilding, and it would grow into a bigger war. But this is the first proper shot thrown. You know, Queen's Quest get the leg up. And then, you know, during the second half of the year, it really becomes more a case of just redeveloping. So you've got the Five-Star Grand Prix. You've got the Goddess of Stardom tournaments that going on. That takes up most of the time. There's an unsuccessful Goddess of Stardom tag title challenge from Io and Viper against Getsu and Hana Kimura. The trio is still defending their artist titles. You see the feud between the two factions starting to grow. Importantly, in November 4, Momo Watanabe returns from her ACL injury. So Queen's Quest is finally at the strength that it was meant to be. You know, she can now finally begin her arc into becoming basically Io's true prodigy. You know, Hazuki's great, Azumi's great, but Momo Watanabe, you kind of feel like was always meant to be the heiress apparent to Io Shirai, and now you get to start to see her, once she gets her leg in underneath her, can really start to become that next step forward. Also in November, Io Shirai wins the Wonder of Stardom Championship from Yoko Beto, kind of confirming she's here for a bit longer and also showing up the strength at the top of the title scene because at this time, Tony Storm is the red belt champion, Mayu Iwatani is injured, and boy, does Stardom need some strength at the top title scene because Tony ain't around all that much, as we talked about last fortnight. Yeah, she's not there. She's not a full-time Stardom wrestler. She's, you know, wrestling in UK. She's wrestling in America.
Right.
They need strength at the top. Who better than Io?
Right. The Mayu injury makes Tony the champion. They, at that point, they truly need a world champion. Who better than Io to be that? It's just a different color belt this time around.
During this period, she's their world champion, basically.
And it effectively brings Queen's Quest to the top and sets up the story for the next number of months that obviously intertwines with Oedo Tai as well. But in the long term, it is to make Momo Watanabe the next leader of this company. Because then you have in the back of your mind, okay, Io couldn't go to WWE this time. Let's see where she is in a year. In the meantime, we got to get someone ready to take over. And that, of course, would be Momo Watanabe, who was taking the baton as the next ace in time. This title reign is very important in the history of Stardom. It's also very good, if you're just wondering. I know, big shock. Io Shirai, good title reign. I know. But I do like that this is the launching point for really not only the rest of her run, but the important next steps of Queen's Quest. That's one of my favorite parts about Queen's Quest Io's era, is that it really did feel like everything she was doing mattered for this group. Because there are times when we talk about factions, right? You and me talk about it all the time. Sometimes you kind of just forget people are in certain factions. Like, they're there, but it has nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
Right? And this was always, especially the Wonder Reign, it was always about getting Queen's Quest to the next level without Io. Yes, she was there doing it to get them to the next level, but I think that's the beauty of it. And as we talk about, first it was established, first it was, okay, we're going to go with this young crew. Here's, you know, powerful foreigner. Here's, you know, Momo comes back from injury, and then they just go pretty much all in from there, slowly but surely. Obviously, the elimination match, which we're about to talk about, is a very big part in Momo taking another big step, as well as, of course, just the Queen's Quest story itself.
I think when you mention like people getting lost in the faction, that's very much a symptom and a side effect of the modern faction system, where everyone kind of needs to be in a group. You did see that less during this time period, when everyone had, like, if you were in a faction, you were there for a specific reason. And then if you weren't in a faction, you were just kind of there. You were just around in Stardom. The negative to that is you did see just people kind of wandering around in the wilderness of the no faction system. And I would argue, like, I prefer the modern setup of Stardom, where everyone is in a group, and you do run the risk of maybe getting lost in the faction.
Yeah.
Like, if you were in Queen's Quest, you were there for a purpose. If you're in Oedo Tai, you were there for a purpose. And it's actually in 2018 when they make the jump to everyone has a faction. We'll get to that very shortly. But we definitely can't get there before discussing that faction gauntlet match, which is January 21, 2018, 5v5, basically the precursor to what we would see in 2024 and just about every second year in Stardom from this point to 2024, if we're being honest, sometimes every year. Comes down to Tam Nakano versus Momo Watanabe. Last person eliminated is kicked out of their faction. Was Tam, she's knocked out of Oedo Tai. Io actually offers her a spot in Queen's Quest. That's also important to note, because I cannot, like, if you're talking sliding doors moments in Stardom, and I know it's like, obviously that was never the intention, but can you picture Tam in Queen's Quest ever?
Like, no, is that, no, 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 no. We got one match of it, pretty much, right? When Io and Tam teamed up, that's it. Honestly, it's the perfect one match queen, like, honorary Queen's Quest moment for Tam, because it just doesn't make sense to me. Tam is the complete opposite of Queen's Quest, right? She's like her, and that doesn't mean that's gonna come off terribly, I understand that, but like, her charisma is the way she acts, right? It's not necessarily presence for her. It's the charisma that jumps off the page and that has set her apart. And, you know, she's just very bubbly and upbeat. And Queen's Quest is very chill and calm. Like, it's just not, it's not Tam. And yeah, there's a reason she made sense in Stars at that time and not Queen's Quest. But as I always say with this Gauntlet match, it's one of the best matches in Stardom's history. You need to go watch it. Stop what you're doing. Come back and listen to this after you watch it, because you'll have a better appreciation for the Queen's Quest story from here on out, because Momo Watanabe, of course, is into the final two with Tam, and that's who gets the winning fall for Queen's Quest, kind of giving Momo this big signature win heading into, of course, what would be the Cinderella, where she would win that as well. But like you said, Mayu Iwatani kidnapped Tam to make her join Stars, so, which was the right move. It was the right move.
Yes. Forever changing the way Tam Nakano would see friendships and factions and Stars, and continue to influence her to this very day.
It should be, I was going to say, everyone likes to point to the Arisa Hoshiki match as like,
yeah,
the match Tam bases her entire life off of. No, it's getting kidnapped into Stars, because that's how we get to everything else.
Oh, yeah. It's the single most important moment in Tam's career arc is this moment here. It influences everything.
Mind you,
I wrote about it years ago, and I do need to do a revised version, because it continues to influence everything.
Uh-huh. It's 2018 when this happened, January 2018. We're sitting here in 2024, and it still is part of her story. Like, she in many ways, if she could have, she would have kidnapped Starlight Kid. She wanted to live that exact same thing that Mayu Iwatani did. It didn't work. She's not good. She can't do that, I guess. She even wore a mask, whatever. This is what I'm going on. This is not the Tam road. This is the Stardom road, and today's the Queen's Quest road. The day we get to the Tam road, we are going to bring lots of tweets. I don't even want to imagine that day, actually, right now. That is so many. That is so much content. Anyways, get back on track. That's my bad.
Yeah. As you kind of mentioned, make sure if you've not already seen it, go and watch this match, because it is one of the definitive Stardom matches. It is on Stardom World, which, yeah, in, once we hit 2018, it is pretty consistent when we talk about a match that will be on Stardom World. But yeah, this is, if you haven't seen it, go and check it out. It is one of the most important Stardom matches. It's a fantastic match. Like, it's just, the quality is there as well, but just in terms of resonation, in terms, yeah, it's perfect. But yeah,
crowd was hot. Momo, too.
Oh yeah, this is a hot Kurikan crowd as well. It's just executed perfectly. If you enjoyed the cage match from last year, Queen's Quest versus Awedo Tai, this is a very similar match in terms of story structure and just the what it means in terms of match. It's a different type of match, but in terms of the emotional resonance, it hits a lot of the same sort of, you know, emotional beats. It's also here that Momo then challenges Io Shirai for the Wonder of Stardom Championship, which takes place on February 18th. She is unsuccessful in challenging, but this is a very important moment because it's basically the litmus test, I think, for Momo. Obviously, she proves herself in the faction match, but this is where she basically needs to prove herself in front of Io. You know, she tries to coup Io in Queen's Quest, win the white belt. She fails here, but this is her first step forward. Then we get to April 15th, which is the Stardom draft, another very important moment. We talked about how this kind of changes the draft system in Stardom forever, because now everyone joins a faction. We have three factions, Awedo Tai, Queen's Quest, and Stars. We get a fourth faction by the end of the night because, you know, no one wanted the Jungle Assault Nation, so they go and form their own group. Thank you very much, Mayu Iwatani. But crucially, Kagetsu won the right to pick first, which meant Io Shirai was on the back foot the whole time. She picked Azumi first. She picked Momo Watanabe second, which meant come the third round, Kagetsu decided to take Azuki third, pulling her from Queen's Quest, forcing her to join Awedo Tai, and creating a bit of a rift. You know, a pissed off Azuki is a very, very dangerous thing.
Pissed Off Hazuki is one of the best wrestlers in the world, actually. just say it correctly. Yeah, but it was time. In many ways, it was time for Hazuki, right? Momo had been picked as next up. Hazuki was the, at the time, obviously it didn't turn out this way, but she would go to become the natural next up in a Wato tie behind Kagetsu. And obviously it would create amazing times in a Wato tie, some of the best faction runs ever, like, you know. But I think that's like very important. Momo was picked to be next up in Queen's Quest. Hazuki was, and again, we talk about Queen's Quest EO era. She, in many ways, at that time, she had set up two potential faction leaders, if not number twos, which, as we know in Stardom, number two, that's as important as any position, right? Mm-hmm. Like, number two is a main eventer at the very least. And that's what Hazuki would go on to become as part of Wato Tai.
We saw how important Hazuki's run in Wato Tai was, because she just worked better with that kind of dark edge to her. Mm-hmm. And obviously running under Kagetsu unlocked that there. She found the perfect running mate opposite Momo Watanabe. She had that fuel inside of her. Basically, Io picked Momo over her. So she had a reason to fight harder and stronger against her, created the perfect rivalry there. Never mind the fact that Azumi was picked before both of them. The true number one, but it created
my point remains. How has this woman never been leader of Queen? you had to bring it up.
Yeah, but yeah, Hazuki gets forced out of Queen's Quest here. An important moment, but Queen's Quest also add a few new faces as well. Bea Priestley joins, who becomes a pretty important member of Queen's Quest, both as a part of Queen's Quest and then as a antagonist of Queen's Quest at the end of her run. Even more importantly, joining Queen's Quest is Chardonnay, who has a very lucrative run.
That's crazy.
And then the steal of the
Chardonnay, if you're out there, we will interview you right here on Stardom Road. I'm just letting you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, any ex-Stardom person, we will interview you. Let's be
specifically
honest.
Definitely Chardonnay.
Yeah, specifically Chardonnay. And in my opinion, the steal of the 2018 draft was Konami with, I think, was the fifth pick for Io Shirai. And then Viper, who wasn't in attendance, so everyone forgot about her, got picked sixth. But Konami joins Queen's Quest for the first time, who has a good run with Queen's Quest, but I also think she doesn't truly get unlocked until the Queen's Quest and then Tokyo Cyber Squad. The Wato Tai and then Tokyo Cyber Squad errors, which I got back from, but you know.
I know what you're trying to say. You just...
Yeah.
You just fell seven times together.
Which is...
I'm watching you trip.
Perfectly. Yeah, yeah, I do it all the time.
It's pretty incredible, though. You think of that draft. And I understand. This is wrestling. It's all predetermined. But that's as good a draft class as you're going to get. You drafted a future World of Stardom champion, Wonder of Stardom champion, multiple-time tag champion, the high-speed champ. You drafted winners. Mm-hmm. And, of course, never mind. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm trying to get an interview here. But I think that's like always cool to look back on. Obviously, Konami, like you said, would have her best days forward, but she became a prominent draft pick the year after, right? She in 1 year elevated herself up through Queen's Quest, and I think that's always just very important to think about when you look at these makeups and what they would go on to become. That's the best part of Stardom's history, is you can see them develop through the faction they're part of at the time. Konami did such great work within a year. 1 year later, she was in the finals of everything, right? And, you know, the beauty of Tokyo Cyber Squad is they had two twos. Like, Konami and Jungle were level in many ways. But that's, again, not the point of this conversation.
We always manage to bring Tokyo Cyber Squad into conversation at some point. But, yeah, Queen's Quest get a nice bump here. It's a nice, strong group, and they have more bodies to them moving forward with this new faction style where everyone's in a group. There is the chance that maybe it gets watered down, but, I mean, you look at this group, and as you kind of mentioned, it's a strong group across the board. You know, you've got the future world Stardom champion, Bea Priestley. And look, her and Chardonnay were a tag team at this time, so you had that kind of vision there, like they're picked to work together here. And it always helps to kind of have a couple of foreigners together because, you know, you're in a foreign location, you don't speak the language. It's nice to have someone that you can talk with. And I don't know United Kingdom's relations, whether Scots people and English people get along. I know the Scotland want independence, so maybe they don't actually get along, so it's probably good for Chardonnay and Bea Priestley to be together, because Viper might not want to hang out with them. But
you would think deep.
Politics here. Io Shirai was very
never. Oh god, we've lost the plot. Queen's Quest. Let's
put us back on the plot.
Yeah.
2 weeks after the draft, Io Shirai proves that she should have picked Momo Watanabe over Hazuki, because Momo Watanabe goes on to win the Cinderella tournament and then challenges Io Shirai once more for the World Wonder of Stardom Championship, which she then goes on to win next month in May. So she officially wins the Wonder of Stardom Championship after having just graduated high school. So she's fresh out of high school. She's 18 years old. She's, you know, basically the second top champion in the company. And as we've talked about, the white belt is not some secondary title. It's what you make of it. And it wouldn't take that long until the white belt is main eventing over the red belt with her as champion. Over Kagetsu, mind you. Over Kagetsu.
We will go a lot more into Momo's reign as champion next episode, but she's being positioned as the next ace of this company. Yes. And they put her in a position to become that in every which way, which included the big main events, the big matchups. And in many ways she delivered, but again, that's next episode. I don't want to spoil it, even though many of you probably know exactly where we're going to be going.
Yeah, it was such an important moment for her to get this crowning moment. Yeah, Io Shirai being able to stick around for that extra year and give this victory to Momo, because even at this point, not anyone beats Io. It's a very select company. It's only your Mayu Iwatanis, your Mandy Leons, and now your Momo Watanabes who get these kind of victories over Io Shirai. But yeah, it's the crowning of your new leader, which would officially go over next month in June when Io Shirai officially says goodbye. You know, she has her goodbye gauntlet match in Shinkiba, and then she has her final match in Kuroken Hall, teaming with Thunder Rock for the last time against Hazuki and Kagetsu, and perhaps more importantly, in the semi-main event, because in the main event was Momo Watanabe defending that Wonder of Stardom Championship match, essentially signifying that Io Shirai is saying goodbye, and here is your new top star in Stardom and your new leader of Queen's Quest. June 17th officially marks the end of the Io Shirai era of Stardom and the Io Shirai era of Queen's Quest.
What an emotional ride. Io's obviously Io's Stardom run is stuff of legend, but Io's run of Queen's Quest wasn't supposed to go as long as it did, but it set up Stardom for years to come because it did last as long as it did. And I think that, again, is why her era is so important. You know, we'll get to the importance, of course, of the Momo era and what that would ultimately become with Queen's Quest really on top, continued, whether it be with Momo as champion or Otami as champion. But Io's run is so important for Stardom's future, Stardom's history. We went through it every step of the way here for a reason. You know, the, these these history faction episodes, we don't want to just sound like, you know, whatever. We want to give you our thoughts and whatnot, but we're trying to give you the most important moments. And Queen's Quest has so many, especially EOS, because it's so much about development. It's so much, right? We're not talking about EOS title reign here as much, because EOS title reign was only important by the end, because that was going to Momo, right? Momo was going to be the one beating her. Unlike when Momo was champion, that's very important for all of Queen's Quest moving forward. So I do want to say that, like, we, you know, we're not brisking over an EO reign and the world title reign, which we talked a lot about on the EO Shirai versus Mayu Iwatani feud episode, if you want to go check that out now. But that's, we're talking the most important moments for the factions. And this was, again, development, growth, and setting up Stardom for what would be some of their biggest years yet after EO leaves. Which says a lot about what Queen Quest was.
This one for EO, obviously, like, she was firmly established. Like, she didn't need to be built up within Queen's Quest. This was, in many ways, her way to give back to Stardom before she leaves. She took three youngsters under her wing, Momo Watanabe, Hazuki, and Azumi, and essentially said, by the time I'm gone, I want them to be in a position that they can launch into big things. By the time she left, Momo Watanabe won the white belt. Hazuki was blaring onto the scene as Oedo Tai's number two. And Azumi, like, she took a little bit longer because she was still basically in middle school. Like, legally, she probably wasn't allowed to be. But she was already, like, a phenom at her age. And it was really the only thing holding her back was her age. Yeah, she, a lot of the hard work had been put in. And then it was just waiting for her to mature as a person, as a wrestler. And, yeah, you see that through the Momo Watanabe era, just putting those little pieces together. But, yeah, you see her when she asks to join Oedo, you see her when she asks to join Queen's Quest at the start of 2017, and you see her when Io Shirai leaves. And there's so much growth just in that short time for someone at that age. You can see the work that Io Shirai put in to prep her for what, you know, now you look at her in 2024, she is just, like, it's ridiculous. Yes, she's a 10-year-plus veteran, but she's just such a ridiculously talented person. And a lot of that is thanks to Io Shirai's guidance.
Azumi feels like the closest thing to an Io clone in, like, today, if that makes sense. And I say that in the best way possible, like, uberly talented, has just, like, natural charisma to her. It's not, you know, Azumi's not going to, you know, be cutting, like, these major, she can, I've seen her cut great promos, but she can tell stories and she can deliver great matches just by being herself. That's what that's why EO was so special. It was just so natural to her, and it's so natural to Azumi now, right? We've went through the ups and downs of Azumi's career, right? Here in 2024, she feels like she is the ready to be the next big star. It's why everyone asked for her to be that next big star. And in many ways, that's what EO set her up to be. Right. The EO teachings set her up. It gave her the mindset, right? You know, who's Azumi seeing at WrestleMania this year? She's watching EO in that big spot. And it's like, would I be shocked if Azumi was in that big spot in a decade or two? Well, not two. That would be, I mean, maybe not. I don't know. But in a decade, no, I wouldn't, because that's how uberly talented she is. She is the wrestler that, in many ways, I think transcends the Joshi wall that people refuse to get by sometimes. That's what EO was.
Yeah.
Different wrestlers in some ways. Azumi's speed is unmatchable. But it's that type of transcendent star that I think Azumi can be, much like EO was.
Yeah, she's a quicker wrestler than EO, and she lacks that kind of ridiculous core strength, like EO able to deadlift right. Viper. Like, yeah, in that respect. But yeah, I totally get what you mean in terms of they bring a certain intensity in the ring and aura. And yeah, especially like, yeah, even the promo game, like they carry themselves in a very similar yes. way. And when they get going, they do a lot of things in a similar manner. You watch Azumi going about things and you're like, yeah, I can see, you can see the EO influence, much in the same way you mentioned with Hazuki's double bounce, springboard, drop yeah. kick. There are certain things Azumi does and you're like, yeah, I've seen EO do stuff like that 10 years ago.
Funny enough, I think Momo carries the least of it, despite being the one that replaced her. Momo's just, obviously Momo has went to a completely different place since then. But even so, like, her skill set was very different from what EO's was.
Yes.
You see EO in these two especially still. And I think that's so important because, you know, when you put them in the big matches, more often than not, they're among the best matches in Stardom's year. That's what EO is doing. And I'm not saying it's just all about work rate and stuff like that, but you learn the big match performance from someone.
And it's never just about the work rate with those two. Because like you talk about, say, for example, Hazuki versus Saya Kamitani, like from last year. That match was such a big deal because the crowd was so invested in Hazuki. Mm-hmm. And it's not because Hazuki was able to do chain wrestling. It's because she got the fans invested and wanting to see her win because of how she carried herself in the ring, how she got the crowd involved. And Azumi does the exact same thing. Yes, they can go in the ring. Yes, they're amazing in the ring. But they're also very good at getting the crowd invested in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think when people had expectations for Azumi through the years, it's always been, well, she's already really good, but can she add the other level, right?
Mm.
And I think it was always unfair because people forget Azumi is still, what, was she 21 right now? I have no idea.
22.
22, she turned 22 finally? Okay. Like, I don't know. Like, she, you know, Momo's 24 or 25, so it's like, Momo is still 24. Okay, that's absurd.
Azumi's still 21, sorry. She turns 22 this year, my bad.
My point stands, though, right? It's like, everyone wants her to be this main event ready. She doesn't need to be. She's got her, she hasn't even hit her prime yet. She's not even like, she's still years away from her prime. That's how great she is. And in many ways, that's how EO was, right?
Yeah.
EO was so great. That first World of Stardom title reign, which we've talked about many times, but when she got to her prime, it's one of the greatest reigns we've ever seen, as you saw on the Red Belt tier list episode that you can check out anytime on the Count Out Podcast Network or the YouTube channel. But that was just kind of a side note, because now that we're moving on from the EO era, I just wanted to give like love to the originals and what they learned from EO, because we'll talk obviously a lot about Azumi because she's kind of important in the other two eras, but
she sticks around.
EO's inspiration, EO's influence carries on through these wrestlers. And I think that's always really cool to see. She was pretty special, you know. That's what I'm saying. There's a reason that when Mari Golden out, she was wrestling Utami, people lost their minds, rightfully so, ourselves included.
There's a reason why Utami was looking forward to wrestling EO when she came to Stardom. Yes.
Yep. And things line up pretty perfectly. But that's it. That was episode one, the Io Shirai era of Queen's Quest. Next episode, we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk the Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest. Maybe the more familiar era for many people that may listen to this show.
The Scott
era. Yes, the Scott era. The Scott era of Queen's Quest. I guess we're going with that. Lots of accolades to go through when we get to that one. There's a lot of accolades. Thank you, Utami. she had 100 of them. But that'll be a lot of fun because we'll be able to talk more about Rookie Utami, obviously. You can go check out the Big Rookie Utami episode right here.
Plugging up the whole
party. Hey, listen, it's not my fault that we've perfectly covered certain things. Okay. I just want people to go back, because if you miss that episode, if you're coming in late, you can go learn more. That's the beauty of this show. You can always go back and learn.
On the Can Out Podcast Network.
That's my favorite thing to do. And you took it away from me. So yeah, just look forward to that. And then of course, in a month or so, we'll be talking to you, Tommy, Aphrodite, and whatever Shia Kamatani has done with this group. but that is what to look forward to in terms of Star Road. But what should people be looking forward to with you, Trent? What do you have up your sleeve right now?
Well, my sleeves are mostly emptied right now. I did all of my work building up to Stardom, the conversion, leading up to Saya Kamatani dropping the flag, so to speak. But I will plug what I dropped there, because it was quite a bit. I had an interview with Zena, who was the challenger for the Red Belt Championship. I got to interview my fellow Aussie, so check that out on Razura. She talked about a few different things. It was kind of cool getting to sort of hear about her thoughts there, teaming with Mina Shirakawa, sort of what Mina's meant for her coming through into the Stardom system and stuff. And also spent a lot of time in this era that we've been talking about today, because I went through the entire 7+ year history of Oedo Tai versus Queen's Quest, looking at their entire war and feud, looking at all of the battles and the defections and the betrayals, and compiling it all into one big article over on Razura. So if you're a newer fan and wanted to get the full picture, the full story, even though the final battle has happened, you can see the full context there. Been very well received. I'm actually surprised, because yeah, a lot of newer fans have been coming in. They don't know the full story. I kind of figured most people probably wouldn't care about the full story, especially because it's a big article. Shock horror, 7+ years of, you know, battles and wars, featuring people that, yeah, not everyone knows who Chris Wolf is, but you know, she's there. But yeah, people have been very receptive to that. So thank you very much for those who've read it and given me good feedback on it. But if you haven't, it's on Resura, resuramag.com. Check out both of those articles / interviews over there. And you can follow me on Twitter /X at OneUpCulture.
Can't wait to make that article an episode or two or three. Thank you for that.
Find my work for content.
Oh, absolutely. That's what we're here for. And it's easier, because then we just have something to go off. That'll be far down the line. We've done a lot of Queen's Quest lately. Obviously, we're in the midst of Queen's Quest series right now. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Eat Wrestling. As always, check out the 5-star JoJo show this week. I'll be talking Saya Kamatani's Queen's Quest and how that went down. What I thought was a really good conversion show otherwise. The fallout from that. Margold had another big weekend with Mariah and Miku wrestling to another draw, and whatever else is going on in the world of Joshi. And I have some interviews coming up. I won't say them because I don't like to jinx them. It's just what I do. One might be the Sun God.
I mean, you can't jinx that.
I know. I feel pretty good about that one. It's a busy month coming up for her. So yeah. It's like,
yeah,
you know, time to shine. Because Sun, whatever. And if I say this on this podcast, it means I'm going to have to do it. So I'm going to say it. It's dangerous. But I am going to bring back the Future of Joshi series that I did last year. Future Joshi series went pretty well. I mean, there's some people that didn't go well for. That's not my fault. Some people were tired.
Like, it's their fault.
Like, it, you know, Joshi is such an unpredictable world. We've talked about that, right? But I did that series originally on Voices of Wrestling. I'm going to bring it to Razura. Don't think I'm going to write an article per wrestler this time. I think it's going to be all one article, and I'm probably not going to have that much help this time. I talked to a lot of people when I made that one. This time I'm going to keep it keep it. I just absolutely smacked the shit on my microphone. I'm gonna keep it more contained. Probably have Ryan and Trent help out this time around. Yeah, Trent just learned this. Trent knew I was doing it. Well, actually, Trent knew I had the idea of doing it. I don't think he actually believed I was gonna do it because I didn't either. But I put
it
out.
I have faith in you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Someone know I was doing it, apparently.
Well, no, I just, you know, making a few words on someone here or there. You know, that's what I did last time. But there's so much. There's already so many more young wrestlers in the world of Joshi to highlight that I was like, I don't have to wait as long as I thought I was going to. There's been an influx of rookies and influx of talent that have just jumped out over the past year. So I want to highlight them. I want to highlight the future. You know, that Hanan wrestler worked out pretty well that I highlighted last year. You may have heard of her. Maria obviously would become a champion. Ibuki Hoshi would become champion. Rest in peace to Asahi. That does break my heart. She was on the list. Funny enough, we had Koki on the honorable mentions. Look at her now. Like, you know, that's just the thing. There's a lot of wrestlers to dive into, though, so I'm looking forward to doing that. So something to look out for from me. But otherwise, that's it. We're done. So until next time, this was the Stardom Road Podcast right here on the Countout Podcast Network. Until next time, see ya.
This has been a Countout Podcast.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.